How dare you? I want to talk to you this morning about three questions that every human in China, in Iraq, in Iran, in Afghanistan, in South America, in Europe, every human asks these three questions. They're just three that we all want to know. And today we're going to look at the second question, but here they are. The first question every human being wants to know, because today is the question mark. What's my life sentence? What is this? Make sentence of my sentence. So for the first question, for those of you taking notes, it's where did we come from? Isn't that a great question? Everybody's trying to figure this thing out. In fact, it is so passionately argued and debated that that question has had to go to Supreme Courts. That question has been fought over. People have gone to war over it. Is there a Big Bang? Was there this primordial soup? Was there this giant evolution where once we swam with a little tail, then we crawled as a lizard, and then we evolved into a bird, and then into a monkey, and then into a man, and then drove a Mercedes? I mean, it's a huge question. Or did aliens plant us here? And that was a joke in the 50s of a comic strip, and it became a religion. Scientology. It was supposed to be a joke, and now it's a huge religion. That aliens plant us. I mean, after all, the pyramids and all of that. And then, how about this? Then the debate is, well, maybe, just maybe, about, 10,000 years ago, maybe there was this God who said, let there be light. And he created everything we see. So everybody's asking the question. So is there a question mark really at the end of that? Not for me. My question mark has been bent into an exclamation point. And I will tell you this. I know that I know that I know that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. I just know that. How do you know that? Because I love science, and science proves that a whole lot more than anything else you have. And I'm not going to go into that. Go back and look at our series about a year and a half ago, and you'll catch up on those notes. Second question, what am I supposed to do while I'm here? I mean, God gives us, the scripture says, about 70 years. It says in the Proverbs, and if with some good strength and health, a man might live 80 years. And with a lot of medication, we might even live to be 100. And so if I'm medicated for those last 20 years, watch out, folks. I'm still driving, okay? I don't know what you're going to do when you're 80. If the Lord tarries, I'm going to have a little fun. I had fun when I'm a kid, when I returned to diapers and drooling. I'm going to have fun at 80, okay? If you're 80 here, I apologize to you. This is just the way I'm going to do it, okay? And now wipe your mouth, okay? What? Why am I here? What's the purpose? What are we here for? I don't know. Eat, drink, and be merry. Party, the American dream. My counselor told me in high school, I'm here to do one thing. Go get a good job to make a lot of money, marry someone that makes me happy, and then buy all the kinds of stuff that'll make me happy. Go get a good job. Make money. So I did. I went into law school. I thought, that's what I'll do. And I partied right on through most of it because that's what made me happy. I kind of pulled Solomon's chapter 2 moment. I said, hey, I'm going to test pleasure. If it feels good, I'm going to do it, because that is the world's motto. It must be right because it feels good. So go ahead and do it. And that's the way we all ought to live, Solomon said, because that's the way we're taught. It can't be wrong if it feels good. So, is there a question mark? Yeah, and my question mark was turned into an exclamation point. That is not how I live anymore. But Solomon kind of did. And then, of course, the third question. You'll love the third question. Every human that's ever lived is asked this question. What's going to happen when we die? Because we're all going to die, and we're all going to go into what? Are we going to go into reincarnation if you're Buddhist? Are we going to go into nirvana? Are we going to go into paradise with 70 virgins if you're a Muslim? Are we going to go into heaven with streets of gold if you're Christian? If you're atheist, do you go into nothing? I mean, everybody's asking this question, and everyone wants to know. And My question mark has been turned into an exclamation point because I met someone who went there and came back to tell us all about it. His name was Jesus, and he was pretty sure about what's going to happen. So I know what's going to happen to me when I die. People are going to have a funeral for a bunch of ashes, and I'm going to be dancing and partying with my sister, my niece, now my grandfather, my aunt, my uncle who led about 30 of us to the Lord 30 years ago. I know what I'm going to be doing. What are you going to do? The question isn't maybe the end and the beginning I want to focus on today. The question is in the middle. Do you have a question mark in the middle? And so here it is. What are we supposed to do while we're on this earth? Party, 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 party. Make all you can, get all you can, do all you can. And Solomon becomes the quintessential man who said, if it felt good, I did it. So he went out and he got himself the party stuff. Cotton candy. Wait, it's gone. Let me do that again. Cotton candy. It's gone. It's amazing. Something that looks that good and tastes that good just disappears in your mouth the minute it hits it. It's kind of like all the things that we tend to grab a hold of. It seems like we just bought that new car and it's broken. It seems like we just got healthy and we're sick again. It seems like we just fixed the house and the roof is leaking. How come all these things don't seem to last very long? Aren't those the things that make us happy? And yet, we meet Solomon. He says, man, I grabbed this and I grabbed that and I had harems. I had 300 wives and 700 concubines. God help him. No wonder why when God says, what would you like? He says, I need wisdom. I got 1,000 wives. And God's like, I can help you. He had everything. He had harems. He had concerts. He had wealth. He had everything you could ever imagine. And he said this, the entire book of Ecclesiastes, vanity, 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 meaningless, meaningless. Here's a translation, emptiness, emptiness. He said, I had it all. And in other words, I have a hole in my heart, every human does, and I was trying to fill it and find out what fits. Parties, I had wine. Harems, I had women. Flocks and sheep, I had it all. Money, I had Solomon's treasure. By the way, it's still out there somewhere. And I know Nicolas Cage founded a national treasure underneath a church in Philadelphia. I was at that church. In fact, come back in 2 weeks and you'll get to see that church. We shot on location there for one of our life sentences. And I didn't see any treasure there. Where's it at? Who knows? Solomon had, he wrapped himself in all of it. And he said, I'm so empty. I've got everything a man could ever imagine. And he said, I'm not happy. Reminds me of a story. Have you ever heard the story? When I was a kid, I remember my mom reading the story to me. The emperor's, not the new groove, the emperor's new clothes. Remember the story? The emperor's new clothes? This emperor wanted to have the finest clothes you could ever find, and so he got these tailors. And if you didn't make it just right, he was beheading these tailors. And so everybody was afraid, and one tailor got this smart idea. The king came to him and says, make me the finest ornate clothes you can. And so he got this idea. Okay, and he put it up there. He says, here it is. And of course, it was nothing. He says, here's the most beautiful robe and clothes you've ever seen, and only people who are wise and great can see these clothes. Of course, what does everybody do? Oh, yeah, we can see those. So what does he do? One day he throws a parade to show off his new clothes, and he gets dressed in his new clothes. And he walks out in the streets, down the street in his new clothes. And he's going down the street. Everybody, of course, is too embarrassed to say they can't see it. And so, of course, they see it, and they're all applauding, and they're all caught up in the nothingness. Until one little kid in the crowd says, hey, the king, the emperor, is naked. To which then, of course, the emperor realized the charade. And he got out of his pride. Isn't it amazing how we in the world have wrapped ourselves in so many things? And we have deluded the world. He said, see? And there's nothing there. And yet we say, see how great we are? And we've wrapped ourselves like the emperor in our nakedness. And we say, how beautiful. Until someone comes along and says, hey, you're naked. All those things that you called great, Maybe God is saying it's time to get dressed and get clothed with things that matter. And so we meet Solomon. And Solomon says, let's get dressed. I love in the Message, there's a great scripture in the Message that will remind us of this, and it's in Proverbs 11:28, and this is written by Solomon. And he says, a life devoted to things is a dead life, a stump. A God-shaped life is a flourishing tree. Isn't that interesting? The same guy who wrote, I got everything, wrote, if you live your life devoted to things, it's dead. So the question is, what is the key to happiness? If my counselor in high school was right, the key to happiness, obviously Hollywood or Washington, D.C., by the way, Washington, D.C., the county, is the richest county. While last year, the American income went down 6% last year, the county in the Washington, D.C. area went up, their income, oh, I'm sorry, over the last 10 years has dropped 6%, or $5,000 on the median household. The income in D.C. in that county has gone up 26%. I'm living in the wrong county, but I'm preaching to the right crowd. Isn't that interesting? We were there in D.C., trust me. You're going to see some of that stuff. We got in a little bit of trouble in D.C., not too much, but just a little bit shooting our videos, and you'll see those in a few weeks. But we had some fun out there, and I looked at this and I said, man, I just don't see a whole lot of happiness. We were in Times Square. We were in Philadelphia, and we're just looking for this thing and asking people, what's the American dream? What is happiness? Well, I don't know. I think it's getting more things. Ooh. I did some research. Because I was, my daughter the other night, we were going home and she wanted a Slurpee. So we stopped to get a Slurpee, a slushie. She got in line 15 minutes. I'm watching this lady in line in front of her. 15 minutes it seemed. If it was 5, it was 20. And she's going through getting lottery tickets. And I'm watching the lady literally doing this. Now, I'm not a lottery guy because I'm an OCD kind of personality. I can't drink. I can't gamble. I'd be done. Now, I know there are some people who can do this and go play as a recreation. Listen, God bless you if that's what you want to do. I just watched $20 bills just getting peeled right off there. And she's standing there and she's scratching these things because if she won, she was going to buy some more lottery tickets. I'm thinking, I'm kind of missing the purpose here. I think what she was looking for is to hit the big one, right? Remember when it was like $700 million not too long ago? I went out and bought a ticket. I'm not a gambler. I just did it as a sermon illustration. I bought a ticket. I came home. I told my wife. I said, I bought a ticket. Because people will call me and they go, Pastor, I'm in the lottery, and I just want you to know, if I win, the church is going to get a lot of money. I'm like, is that kind of dealing, begging the thing of, hey, God, see, I called the pastor. Let me win. Yes, and I would take the money, okay? Well, sure, we'll go ahead and build a new church. But really, is that what we put our hope in? Because I watch this lady just peeling the 20s off doing this, and then, like, here we go. And I thought to myself, that $700 million, the odds of me winning, I did some research, the odds of me winning, I had a higher chance of being hit by a rhinoceros run over while showering. Apparently, this has happened more times than people have won the big lotto, okay? I have a better chance of being struck by a 747 in my house while cooking breakfast. Apparently, this has happened more than people have won the big jackpot. So then I found a research that a finance group did on the people who have won the lottery in the last several years. And here's what they found out, that 70% of the people who have won the lottery, 70% have squandered it all within 3 years. They're bankrupt. They are worse off. And here's what they found. Quote, in the process, they will see their family and friendships destroyed and their financial hopes dashed into bankruptcy. Apparently, grabbing all that money may not be the answer. What they said is they found out that people's characters are revealed in it. Goodness is personified and so is badness, if I can use that word, is personified through this. So if that's not the answer, what is it? Well, be patient with me. For those of you that heard me share this before, I called my grandmother just before July 1st and my grandfather to wish them a happy 71st wedding anniversary. I called him before that. I mean, it hadn't happened yet, but they were coming up on 71 years of marriage. And my grandfather passed away on that day. Oh, it's okay. 94, believer in Jesus, trust me. Not an awe, but a wow. That man has seen everything from the Great Depression, World War, 1919, World War II, 20s, yes, World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, and a farmer. Buried a couple of his kids, buried three of his kids, a couple of his grandkids. The man has been through it all. So don't say offer him. He is celebrating with those kids and grandkids and dancing in glory, okay? Not a problem for him. Now, Grandma, on the other hand, she's 89, and it's a different story. But I called her up. I said, Grandma, tell me, what is happiness? How did you stay married to Grandpa for 71 years? And by the way, my grandfather is old school. I don't know what your grandparents are like, but when I met my grandpa, I mean, he had a couple of words. That was one word, and that was an answer to almost every question that you ever had. Okay? The other one was, I suppose. Didn't matter what it was, I suppose. Okay? That was my grandfather. Those are our conversations for, you know, all the years I've known him. I called him up, and I said, can you tell me, I'm doing a thing on marriage, tell me how you guys stayed married for all these years and happiness. And my grandmother said, there's three things to happiness that I found. She says, number one, you need to learn to give and forgive. I said, oh, Grandma, that's good. I said, you've had to do a lot of giving. She goes, yep, and forgiving. I said, I'll bet you have. That's great. That's great advice. She said, number two, you need to learn to laugh at everything. She says, life will throw you nuts. You need to learn to laugh. And no wonder why Solomon, the smartest man who ever lived, wrote in Proverbs, laughter does to the body like good medicine. Some of you need some medicine in your life. You need to learn to laugh. Go get some Laurel and Hardy or some Abbott and Costello or some Lewis and Martin. And some of you are going, explain that to your kids, who those people are. And kids, you need to get your parents maybe some, you know, Adam Sandler or some Will Ferrell or whatever and explain that stuff, or don't. And then she said the third thing, which I thought was really interesting. The third thing she said, and we are happy because we've learned to be content with what we have. Well, there's a big thing that Solomon figured out, because the entire book said emptiness, emptiness. I thought I had something, and I found myself at the end of life naked. And so he comes up with an answer, just like my grandmother. What a wise woman. She is an awesome lady. It's fun to go visit Grandma and Grandpa. It was fun to go visit them before Grandpa passed, and then even going to visit at the funeral. What a great celebration we had. But we'd go to his house and knock on the door, and you know Grandpa and Grandma's house because the TV is blaring at 65. I mean, he's got it cranked to the max. It can't go up another notch because Grandpa can't hear. And Grandma, with her eyes and her astigmatism and all the stuff, she can't see. So when we send her letters, she puts it up on the microfiche, up on this, explain to your neighbors, up on this projector, up on the wall so she can read letters because she just can't hardly see anything. So it's fun going to the house because you can't just knock on the door because they never hear you. And then you just open the door and you go and you go, hey, we're here. And of course, Grandpa goes, what? And Grandma goes, who is it? So, I mean, we kind of go through the whole thing. Grandpa knows who we are, but Grandma can hear what we say. And what an awesome couple. I've learned a lot of life lessons from them. And today our teacher, though, is Solomon. And he says this. If you look in your Bible, here's something to underline. And take this home with you today. Let me bring this home for you. In chapter 12, in verse 13, he finishes this book of, oh, meaningless, meaningless. Eat, drink, and be merry. Life is just, it means nothing. And he says this. Now all has been heard, and here is the conclusion of the matter. And he says two things. Fear God, help me, and keep his commands. Fear God. What does that mean? Fear God. I looked up that word fear because fear is like, oh, I'm afraid. And there's a lot of people afraid. And we ought to be afraid of God in the sense that there's a Hebrew word. It's called pashad. The Hebrew word pashad means this overwhelming judgment that is going to crush people at the end and destroy the earth. That's pashad. Now, that's an interesting word, pashad. I had a young man in Croswell 20 years ago when I pastored up there that was in my youth group, The Rock, And this guy came up to me, nice young man, adopted, been through a lot in his life. And he came up to me and says, Pastor, I have to give up on Jesus. I said, what's going on? He says, the only reason I believe in Jesus is because I'm afraid of going to hell. And I said, man, I'm going to tell you, that's okay. You don't want to go there. He goes, but that's the only reason I believe that I'm in this relationship. What he was saying is, I want to love God, and I'm not there. I said, Mark, if you will, you hold on to that fear, and one day that's going to turn into a love. Just hold on. It's coming, and you'll learn to love God. Oh, he fell in love with a young lady there, and she's in a worship team, and she just loves God with all his heart, and he fell in love with Jesus, and it was interesting. I hadn't been there in 20 years. I went up last year to watch a football game. He is the band instructor up there. And I'm up in the stands, and he comes up getting the group out there to march. In the middle of it all, he saw me after 20 years. And we made eye contact. I didn't know if you remember. He comes up in the middle of it all and gives me a big hug. He says, thanks for everything. And I thought, there it is. See, he moved from that fear into a love. But that's not the word that we're using here. This isn't the revelation fear. Solomon uses the word yare. Yare. And I looked that up, and I've never heard that word. So I looked it up, and I went, I'd never heard this word. I didn't know that's what he meant all these years. And here's what he said. Yare, we need to fear God. He said, we need to revere him in his awesomeness and worship. Wow. So with a little bit of homework, here's what I found out. He said, if you want to know the meaning of life, you need to wake up every day with this realization that there is an awesome God, and he is in charge of everything. Woo. Let me say that again. It means you wake up in the morning and you have this, that there's a God. I don't know about you, but when I woke up this morning, I got up, I stepped outside after listening to some praise, worship, music, kind of getting my day going, brushing my teeth, that's kind of what I do, and just kind of get my praise on. I like to wake up to the sound of God instead of the sound of the news, instead of the sound of the coffee pot. I like to get up to the sound of God. It just sets my day. It gets my mind towards this fear of God, this awe. And then I walked outside. When I got outside getting ready to come over here, I walked outside of that 48-degree weather. I looked at the trees that were starting to turn because of the filament of the parchment of the photosynthesizing was changing. I have no idea why leaves change. All I did is saw the colors were turning crimson and orange, and my wife said, it's starting. And I breathed in that 48-degree weather. I looked up at that blue sky where the sun was rising, and I went, Pashad, no, Yare. And I went, God, you are awesome, and you are always in your place. The sun is rising right where it was supposed to be. I'm not on a planet spinning 770 miles an hour on an axis, traveling 82,000 miles per hour in space with no one at the driving at the wheel. I know that my God is in his place, and he is in charge of my life, and he is interfering and interceding in every activity of my life. And when I breathed in this morning, I went, Pashad, no. I went, Yare, God is awesome. And I looked up in the sky, and I said, God, and he just reached in and grabbed my breath. That is the word awe, and he is the sum of my. And I said, God, you are. And that breath went into me, and here's Yare. And it came right back out and went out of my lips and off of my tongue. And it said, God, you are awesome. And that is the word that he is saying. Why do I live? Why do I exist? I exist to wake up and say, God, you are awesome. That is what I live for. And I can't wait to see what he's going to do next in my life. No wonder why he said in Proverbs 1, verse 7, the same man who wrote about pleasures and vanity wrote this, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You want to get wise? You want to have wisdom in this world? Have this, God, you're in charge. God, I worship, because when we lift up our worship, God inhabits the praises of that worship. He said, God hasn't been inhabiting my life. Well, lift him up. Get an awe in your life. There's an awe every day of my life. I can find an awe. I can stop and find. The other day I was driving through a neighborhood after stopping by and seeing some friends who were having their life group, and I just kind of stopped at a corner. I looked to my left, and I saw the most unique shaped tree. And I thought, that's a one of a kind. That is an artist's rendering of the billions of trees that have ever existed on planet Earth in history and time. That's the only one. And I stopped and I saw it. How hard is it to be filled with awe and to lift it back up to the one who painted the canvas? The second thing is this. Obey his commands. Obey his commands. Jesus said, if you love me, you will obey me. See, I don't follow God. I don't have to line up my life and go, oh, I hope I got this all right. No, that's like saying to my wife, well, I hope I do everything right with my wife. Well, I hope I can get this right. So she's not. No, if I love her, I'm going to obey her. I'm going to do things because I want to do things. I'm going to cook her some food. I'm going to clean something. I'm going to surprise her. I'm going to do things because I love her. Guys, it's not hard to obey God when you're in love with him because you want to obey him because you're just motivated to do good things when you're in love, right, guys? I mean, guys, this morning, right? All you men that are married this morning, I mean, you would do anything for your wives, right? Guys, I'm trying to help you right now. This is the part of the message where I'm going to send you home on a good note or a bad note. I mean, guys, if you are in love with her, I mean, you want to do anything you can for her, you will obey, love and obey, honor and obey. You want to do that because you are so in love with her. I mean, if she asks you to do something, I mean, you want to do it, don't you, guys? Right, guys? You would do anything for her. Some of you are like in so much trouble right now because she's going to use this as soon as you walk out those doors. But, guys, you did. You did when you first got married, when you were trying to win her heart and spend the rest of your life. You did anything to win her heart. You canceled golf outings. You canceled sport games. You got a hold of some of those things that come on that little piece of paper. I think they call them Hallmarks. And they put all the little fancy frilly things glued on there and swirly swirlies. And you open it up and you found one that said all this romantic stuff that if you told your friends, they would demand your man card. And you got that, and then you added your own. You said, I am now Shakespeare. And you wrote, roses are red, violets are blue. You are so beautiful. And so are you. And you gave it to her. And she probably still has that somewhere. And it wasn't that hard because when you're, guys, you guys that are looking one day to find that woman, you are going to do things, you are going to say things, and you won't mind. Your friends are going to go, what happened to you? And you're going to be like Thumper and Bambi. I mean, old Thumper, he saw her hopping along, and he was just like. And Bambi looked over at the skunk and said, what happened? He said, oh, no, at the owl. And he said, he got Twitter-pated. See, when you're Twitter-pated, you'll do anything. Ladies, when you fell in love, I know you ladies in here, you would do anything. See, it's not hard to obey your husbands. It's not hard to surprise them because you're so in love with them. You're just, I mean, it's just something you're thinking about now. In fact, you're thinking probably right now, I would just do anything. Ladies, right? You would do anything to make him happy, right? Right, ladies? I mean, he works hard. I mean, you're probably thinking to yourself, I would love to give you, to my husband, a back rub this afternoon for 60 minutes and not even bat an eye. See, why is that so funny? If you're in love, I'm so in love with God to fear him. I am in such awe of who he is. I'm in such a relationship with the bridegroom and being the bride of Christ. I am so in love with him. I'm in such awe. He just takes my breath away. Or have I been in love and married to him so long that it's just become a routine and I've lost the passion and the surprise? How about we surprise God today? How about we do something for him that just blesses? I got a phone call this week, blew my mind on my day off. I got a phone call. I let go on the voicemail, and I thought, I better see what that is. I got it, and someone just decided they wanted to bless my family and I. What a surprise. I'm telling you, a blessing. beyond blessings. I tell you, surprises are awesome. It just took my breath away. Can I tell you, God wants to do that in your life, but let me do this. How about we do that for God? How about we just surprise Him today, and we take the sentence, my life sentence, and we take the subject and the predicate, and we get rid of the dyslexia, because that's what Solomon had. He made himself the subject of the sentence, and God was the predicate. And God says, let's fix this. Let's fix this sentence. Sonia, if you'll come on up, let's close this out. Here's what I found out. God wants to fix our sentence. How many of you right now, your sentence is, God, I am the subject. I am just looking out for number one. And God says, can we switch the sentence around? I say dyslexia, you know, a dyslexic, kind of reading backwards, forwards, mixing things up like the atheist insomniac who sat up all night wondering if there really was a dog. You know what I'm talking about? The guy who flip-flops everything. I meet people all the time who say, I want God in my life. I want this 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 in my life. And I tell that person, that's easy. Take all of that, set it aside, grab God in your heart, and put Him on the throne. Make Him the subject of your life. I had a professor in college, Dr. Rogers. He wore plaid pants with an off-colored jacket and a tie that had nothing to do with anything he was wearing. He did not do this because he meant to be off-color. Dr. Rogers was from the 50s, and so were his clothes. And I thought, who is this guy with these taped rim glasses who puts Garfield jokes up on the big screen every day in classic Greek or philosophy of ministry or history? I had this guy for a lot of classes. He had a dog named Odie. I mean, he was Garfield. And I found myself joking around with him a lot. And he made us type the longest papers. He'd say, okay, take a Greek word. Now I want you to put a 10-page, tight, double-spaced paper together on that Greek word. I had Pauline epistles, the 13 books of Paul for sure. And on every one, he said, I want you to write a 50-page, typed, double-spaced dissertation. 50 pages typed. Whew, that's expensive. That's why I married my typist. I'd turn these papers in, and as a testimony of coming out of drugs and the wild lifestyle I had in pre-law and just the change that God had wrought, I said, I'm going to ace every one of these classes, and I'm going to show how God can change your life when you make Him the subject. I got a paperback, a 50-page paperback, and it had all these red lines, just scribble, 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 scribble. And I said to him, what is this? I felt like it was my life at 18, my life sentence. I'm going to do this. Nope. At 22, God says, do this. I said, I'm going to do this. Nope. At 30, do this. I feel like I keep having to have this red ink. 7 years ago, I said, God, I'm going to take this job as this youth pastor, the dream job in Chicago or in Florida. I'm going to take these dream jobs. And God says, no, you're not. It's more red ink. He says, plant a church. I said, well, there's a lot of red ink there. I don't have a congregation. More red ink. I don't have a church. More red ink. We don't have a denomination. More red ink. I don't have any money. I don't know if you've ever felt that way when you're 18 or when you're 40 or you're 50 and you're trying to reinvent your life and you have all this ink. I found out God has an eraser. And my professor taught me this in college. I went to him one day and I had a B. I think it was a 92. A 93 was an A in my university there. It was tough. But I was maintaining. And he gave me a B. And I went to him. I said, you gave me a B. I said, what's wrong with this paper? He said, nothing. I said, what's wrong with the content? He says, nothing. You nailed Paul's writing in Thessalonians. You did it. You got everything right. I said, you gave me a B. Look at all the red ink. He goes, your punctuation is terrible. Your grammar is horrible. I said, who cares about grammar? Who cares about punctuation? I got the paper right. He said, one of these days, your punctuation is going to matter to you. I want you to learn that now. It's going to be an important lesson in life. All this red ink taught me it matters whether I have a question mark at the end of my sentence or whether it's an exclamation point. My verb matters. My actions matter. My adjectives of descriptions, they matter in my life. And more importantly, the subject matters in my life. So this morning, maybe you have dyslexia, or maybe your grammar ain't so well. Isn't you wanting to change it? I don't know. And I met someone who used a lot of red ink in my life before I met Professor Rogers. His name was Jesus, and he used a lot of red ink. And that red ink changed my life. He edited my story. And when I screw up yesterday, and maybe on Tuesday, and maybe on Friday, he has red ink. And his blood flows from Emmanuel's veins, from that hill at Calvary today. It still washes away all the mistakes, all the faulty grammar of my life, and it changes my story. You know what I'm here for? I'm here to love people. But I'm here, first and foremost, to let God take my breath, because He's awesome. Would you stand with me? Thank you for your patience.